October 26, 2017. Dr. Mitchell, can we have roll call?
Sure. Angelina Pride?
Present.
David Malkin?
Present.
Donna Friedman?
Here.
Perfect.
Okay. Almost. Are there any changes to the agenda, Dr. Mitchell?
None from staff.
Board, do you have any agenda? Okay. Can I have a motion to adopt the agenda of the board study session of Thursday, October 26, 2017? Favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Today, if everybody would stand, we'll be led in the flag salute by David Malkin.
Everybody please stand and take the flag on the wall there.
Thank you, Mr. Malkin. We'll go ahead and go to public comments. Are there any public comments, Dr. Mitchell?
None have been received.
And I don't have to read my spiel.
You don't. You're good.
Okay. I'm going to turn the program over to Dr. Mitchell, who will introduce our presenters today.
Perfect.
Do this one so it's on the recording. All right. Good afternoon, everybody. So today we have two items. We're starting with positive behavior intervention and support. The Director of Student Services, Mari Bordona, will start the presentation, and then she has a team that will also be sharing information with the board as well. So we're going to get her mic squared away, and then we're going to get going.
Thank you, Dr. Mitchell, President Ebenkamp, board members, for this opportunity to present some information about positive behavioral interventions and supports in our district, and also known as PBIS.
Marty, would you like us to hold our questions till you finish presenting?
Yes, that would be great.
Okay.
In addition to the slides that I believe you have also in your packet some documents that will be shared during the presentation. So I'd like to introduce the individuals who will be assisting in this presentation. To my right is Eleanor Purdy. She is the PBIS district level TOSA and also a fellow trainer with me in tier training for our district. So we're two of the trainers in our district. Next to her is Tatiana Silva from Roland Elementary. Next to Tatiana is Christy Bingham from Blandford. Next to Christy is Danielle Caro, who is also a trainer, a district-wide trainer in Roland from Alvarado, and Carlos Ochoa from Giano. Okay. Oh, I have to do this at the same. Okay, I'm testing. Okay, that's the right one. So our purpose tonight is to give a brief overview of positive behavior interventions and supports. Of the framework and to share the current implementation stages of PBIS in our district and to highlight some of the work of a few of our schools and also to describe the levels of support for PBIS and our next steps. So PBIS is based on the science of behavior, and what that says is that children are not born bad, that aversive consequences do not alone change behavior, and that behavior can be taught and should be taught to students and given specific positive feedback and opportunities to practice in a variety of settings. This is the pyramid, the multi-tiered level of support pyramid that represents the support system of PBIS. It is a pyramid that is intended to encompass both behavioral, social, emotional, and academic prevention and intervention. So at its base, the level we always like to say in PBIS, we want to keep our schools in the green. So at its base is the universal prevention, the primary prevention, that is for all students, all settings, all locations, all classrooms, all teachers. I want to mention that each of the tiers builds on the other tier so that the faithful implementation of each level means that the other levels work better. And so tier one is extremely important because that's the universal piece. It is supposed to be a prevention for students not getting up to tier two, which is targeted prevention and intervention, and then, of course, to prevent students hopefully from reaching tier three, which is 1 to 5% of students typically and is more individualized and based on function. I'm going to go over these in a little bit more detail, but I want you to know tonight we are going to focus mostly on Tier 1, one for a couple of reasons. One, in our district, we now have every school is either training or is implementing Tier 1. And our first cohort is just beginning the implementation of Tier 2, and no one has yet been trained in Tier 3. So, and the second reason is it is the foundation of the whole program and essentially the most important one to implement. Let's talk about school-wide, universal prevention, school-wide and classroom-wide systems. And again, what's important to know about PBIS, that it is a system, it's a framework, so it's not a program. And there are some essential components of that framework. One is that it is team-based. So teams put together what works for their schools. There are parts that have to be implemented with fidelity for you to truly see the results. And for example, for the universal systems, this is all about first best instruction is what it's really about. So first best instruction, if you will, in the expectations and procedures for the school and for classroom, so that students, you catch students before they make the mistake. Part of the universal prevention is that students are given many opportunities for feedback and are also recognized for doing what's right far more often than recognized for doing what's wrong. And again, the idea behind that is that you're building a culture of kindness, of support on campuses. So this is all students, as I said, all locations, all settings, and all staff. Staff is trained to teach the expectations. Schools develop what their 3 to 5 school-wide expectations and classroom expectations will be, and they work together with all of the staff to teach that to the students and then to develop some kind of a reward or recognition piece, and each school does that a little bit differently. These expectations are explicitly taught, practiced, and recognized specifically. So not just saying good job, but telling the students specifically what they did that made that a good job. There is also within the universal system a system of consequences for both minor and major infractions that take place on the campus or in school sites. And these, again, they're universal, so that means they're school-wide and campus-wide, and the team has worked together, the staff has worked to develop those things so that they all agree that that's what they're going to do. So why school-wide positive behavioral interventions and support school-wide and in classrooms? Well, it teaches learning and behavioral expectations at the beginning of the year and enforces them consistently across time and across years, because this is something you every year you roll it out. It creates a predictable system of expectations that provides structure for students and actually also structure for staff. It provides a framework that helps students stay engaged with instructional tasks, and it results in increased student academic achievement and a positive school culture, because if students are feeling supported behaviorally and aren't acting out and being removed from classrooms, then learning, of course, increases and they're able to be in the classroom learning. And again, I always want to emphasize all locations, all settings, all students, all staff. So PBIS is an evidence-based framework. It's been around for many, many years, and it's been vetted globally, and it has been implemented throughout the United States and in several countries in Europe. So there's been a lot of research done in PBIS. So it's shown that consistent implementation results in increases in attendance, in student self-reports of a more positive and calm environment, in staff reports of a more calm environment. It reduces the percentage of students who engage in behavioral disruptions, and it reduces the overall number of behavioral disruptions in general. And perhaps the most important is it creates more open mindsets, and often more open mindsets among adults as you begin to see the data and what the data shows you and that this is working, and you start looking at students and behavior a little bit differently. So the Tier 2 targeted prevention is actually an increase of what Tier 1 is. So these are students who aren't responding well to Tier 1 for whatever. You've implemented it with Fidelity and they're not responding. It should typically only be 15 to 20% of your students. I want to liken this a little bit to academic intervention because it's so much easier in education for us to think of that as a teaching and learning piece. But math, for instance, if you're learning math and you're implementing a universal approach to how you teach it, then you should get the results that put fewer kids in an intervention program. And it's the same way for behavior. So if you're not implementing with Fidelity and you have maybe 50% of your students in intervention, it could mean that you need to look back at what you're doing universally for all students. And so that's how this pyramid really works. So it's increased adult monitoring. If you think of a check-in, check-out system, that is the one of the evidence-based practices that can be used. Children check in the morning, they check in the afternoon, and they get specific and regular daily feedback. Additional academic supports if necessary, because again, in a multi-tiered level of support, you could conceivably have students who are, they behave, their behavior is great, they don't get in trouble, but they're not achieving academically. You could, by the same token, have students who are in advanced placement classes and at the top of the pyramid as far as their stress level, their anxiety, and needing additional supports, even though academically they're doing fine. So it's like, it's a continuum of support for students. Tier 3 is evidence-based and highly individualized supports, and these are more function-based supports, and that means it looks at the function of the behavior. For instance, is it to seek attention? Is it to escape doing something? This is more maybe like a behavior intervention type plan would be made for a student. So this is one-on-one with a student, really looking at the function of that student's particular behavior. And then lastly, what I want to say about all of the different levels is that everything is based on the collection of data. So you collect a variety of outcome data, student data, staff data, and school-wide data, and that data forwards what you're going to do next with your team meets, and you look at your data at these different levels, and is it working? Are you implementing it with integrity? And if you are, what's not working, what do we need to tweak? So it's an ongoing cycle and completely data-based. In Roland Unified School District, this is our PBIS training schedule. So what happens is you get trained in the first tier, and that's your training year. So cohort one began their training in 2015, that school year. They implemented the following year, and while they've implemented tier one, they were doing training in tier two, and so cohort one is now going to be training in tier three. And then cohort one includes these schools, cohort two includes these, and cohort three, this is our final cohort that is being trained this year. So again, it's really based on a cycle of ongoing improvement. And so even though cohort one has already implemented tier one last year, this year many of our cohort one schools they regrouped, they tweaked things, they changed things, they rolled it out a little bit differently, and they will do that every year because they look at the data and that determines what they're going to do. So to personalize it a little bit more, because I skipped that one. I'm sorry. This is our hashtag. Hashtag RUSD PBIS. I'm going to show you just really quickly a few of the tweets that have been sent out by our team. Eleanor was really busy at the beginning of the year going to every school, looking at their activities and tweeting out numerous things. And schools themselves have jumped on the bandwagon and they've been tweeting all of their PBIS activities. If you go to this hashtag, you will be able to see a lot more than I'm going to show you now. So Here's one from, this is Roland L. Santana. Alvarado. Blanford. And Northam. Is there one more?
Yes.
Okay. And there's Rormer having their morning talk walk. So again, all of these activities demonstrate how they're rolling out their tier one and how they're connecting with kids, if you will. So this is really, I think, the fun part, because you want to see, you know, what's really going on in the schools. So I've asked some schools to present different component parts of Tier 1. So you will see from Roland Elementary School, teaching school-wide expectations, how they did that. From Blandford, a system of acknowledging and rewarding appropriate behavior, how they rolled that out. Giano Intermediate is going to share with you their school-wide consequence system that's part of Tier 1. And then Alvarado Intermediate is going to bridge a little bit. They're going to share with you how they're using data in Tier 1 and how they're beginning to bridge into Tier 2. Okay.
Oh, you have that. Okay, so I'm going to talk about how Roland Elementary did their school-wide teaching of expectations. So we started out with the Tier 1 team having meetings, planning PD for the teachers and the staff, and how they were going to launch it with our staff. From there, after they did that, we then did, as a whole staff, we worked together to create behavior expectations for our school matrix. Once we all decided as a group, as a staff, what our expectations would be, then a Google Sheet was sent out to everyone. For grade levels to then sign up and choose times and locations to take their classes out to actually teach the expectations. Once they did that, once they were at their location, then the teachers explained the expectations for each area of the campus, and they explained what each letter in PRIDE stood for. So we have Rascal Pride at our school, so problem solving, respect, responsibility, integrity, determination, and empathy. Now, the way they did this, though, wasn't just the teacher standing up there explaining it to them. We had students demoing Pride behavior. Teachers were doing demos of what good behavior looked like, what bad behavior looked like, and the kids thought it was great to see teachers doing that as well. And we also, some classes made posters to explain the different letters in PRIDE and to explain the different expectations in each location at our school, and then they took those posters and they taught their peers. We had some classes made a movie or a video with iMovie showing some of the expectations around campus as well. And all our staff members really reinforce the behavior expectations, and we really use common language among all the staff, saying, you know, things like, as you know, please show pride, or are you showing pride right now, or are you showing respect? So we're using that common language. Or if we see someone doing one of the behaviors, one of the expected behaviors, we'll say, oh, thank you for showing empathy when you helped that boy get up when he fell down. So here is just a picture too. This is our cafeteria manager actually helping to teach the pride expectations in the cafeteria. This is our banner that we have hanging around. It's also back here for you to see. These are just some more pictures of how we did it. The first picture, you can see this is where the students made posters, and then they taught their peers the expectations of the playground. The middle two are teacher and student demos. And then the third one is, you can see the teacher was in the classroom, and they were going over what each letter in PRIDE meant and what it stood for. And this is a video. How do we play that? This one here? Of what one of the classes made. Oh, no.
The, do the top one. The top one.
Okay. There's a test at the end.
There you go.
Okay, enjoy this 30 seconds.
the end. Very dramatic. So, so we had some of the kids then. So this class actually shared their video with other classes. So I'm, like, my second graders got to watch it and other grade levels, so they can also learn the procedures.
So next, Christy is going to share a system. Once you've taught the children what you want them to do, you develop a system of rewarding appropriate behavior, and that's what she's going to share with you.
Next. Can you go to the next one? Okay, I'm going to go to this one and then go back. So we went through the same process with our staff, and we created our matrix according to the problem areas in our school. And we came up with the acronym PAWS, and we are problem solvers, always dependable, works and plays responsibly, and shows kindness and respect. So with that, we created our PAWS tickets. So once we taught and did the rotation and taught the staff, the classified, and the students, we looked for positive. No, I went back.
Oh, okay. You can go forward,
yeah.
Though. It's on. Okay.
And we created the positive ticket. So we're looking for the positive behavior. It's based on our positive. We tried to look for the perfect pause, not too bait little kindergarten-y and not too scary. So we came up with this one. So when we see them, we give a lot of pause tickets every day. The classified staff have been working really hard. The teachers, everybody has pause tickets. The music teachers, the people that come on campus that work with the children. And on Mondays, we have a recognition. And the morning message gives us the morning message. We say the pledge, and we draw about 25, 30 names. And the kids get excited to come to the office at recess to go collect their items. So that's our reward system. It's working pretty well, and the kids get very excited, and they seems like they get really, they own their behavior a little bit more. And so, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Christy. And next, we have Carlos Ochoa sharing a school-wide consequence system at Giano.
Okay, now, when we teach behavioral expectations specifically and we communicate them explicitly, we can anticipate that most kids will meet those expectations. However, there will be a few that will need more reminders and more supports in order for them to be successful. That's why at Giano, we developed our, and you do have a copy of this document itself, we developed our disciplinary procedures in order to address each behavior consistently and fairly. Now, these procedures about what to do when a student engages in inappropriate behavior are delineated and communicated to the entire staff through that document. Now, the three fundamental components in this development process include determining if the identified behavior is a major or a minor. And in the document, you can see that the left side is for the minors, and the right side is for the majors. Another element is to
For the board in this handout, we're a quick study here.
Thank you, Dr. Mitchell. Now, another critical element of this process was to assign means of correction that are aligned to that specific misbehavior. And finally, to establish clear documentation processes. Now, determining which incidents are majors and minors was an extremely challenging task. It was accomplished through a collective effort that involved input from the Giano staff, from the students, as well as administration. In Giano's case, what we consider majors are those serious acts where students are immediately sent to the office. The incident is investigated and addressed by administration. On the other hand, minors are behaviors which are not necessarily dangerous or place student safety at risk. Nevertheless, they are considered disruptive to the learning environment, and they must also be addressed. But the intent of clearly differentiating minors and majors is to address those minors collectively and to address them in the classroom, minimizing the loss of learning time for that student. Now, both majors and minors are documented through a uniform process. Minors are documented through a minor incident report, and majors are documented through an office discipline referral. Both documents contain the following elements: the location, the identified behavior, possible motivation, and administrative action, as well as other means of correction that go beyond punitive measures. Now, this student disciplinary procedure allows us to strategically address student misbehaviors when they occur in a fair and consistent manner, but more importantly, that the documentation process provides us with the data to take a more proactive approach to addressing misbehavior before it occurs.
Next, we will have Danielle Caro is going to talk to you a little bit about universal screening and school-wide information system SWISS, and build upon what Carlos has done, because she's going to share with you one way to collect data and what they do at Alvarado with that data.
Okay, hello. So our school-wide information system, SWISS system, is what we use to kind of track our, as Carlos was talking about, our majors and minors for referrals and classroom behavior reports. So as we entered Tier 2 this year, we collected data from our elementary feeder schools from the student risk screening scale, and their sixth grade teachers had kind of identified students who might have emotional or social support needs. So early on in summer school, we were able to meet these kids and be prepared for them, and we set up our intervention classes based on how we were going to support those kids coming into seventh grade, as well as our seventh graders placing those ready in an eighth grade intervention class. So that data helped us create those intervention classes, and so we helped. This kind of helped us use our knowledge from our first pilot year of Tier 1 as we came into Tier 2. So this was still new to us at the beginning of the year. So we started to input our referrals into the SWISS system, and that takes us to kind of where we're at today. So we use the SWISS system to look at all our referrals and address different types of behaviors, from like disruption, defiance. It can be just students out of seat, or it could be even profanity, and how we can support students with a positive way to correct that behavior. So here you'll see how we kind of identified our students who had a certain number of referrals, and we placed them into a check-in, check-out system. So it's a positive way to start the day and end the day with, they're kind of paired up with a voluntary teacher who volunteered to be their mentor. And we also use the SWISS data. We look at grades, grade-wise, not academic grades. We looked at our seventh graders and our eighth graders. We looked at it to be able to identify, locations. So a lot of it is obviously classroom because the teachers are documenting it, but we're also getting documentation from our noon duty aides at lunch, and any member of staff can report behaviors. And the other location is the PE. And then just by problem to behavior in general, so our defiance and disruption. So we have a set of students on check-in, check-out, and that's where we are with Tier 2 in working with our kids for positive support.
Thank you, Danielle. So as you can see, the purpose of the data really is for the team now. They look at the data and they figure out, okay, it looks like, for instance, you might have noticed maybe there were more issues in eighth grade. So then you kind of look at, okay, well, what's happening in eighth grade? Let's break that down. Let's flesh it out. Let's disaggregate that a little bit and figure out, is it just a few eighth grade students? Is it a group of eighth grade? So they can do so much with the system to break down the data and really identify maybe some things, supports they need to put in place, or some changes they may need to make in location or, you know, classroom processes and things like that. So that's what they really look at. Next, Eleanor is going to share just how the support system works for PBIS moving forward.
Hi, good evening. So in Roland, we have three levels of support. We have our PBIS district coordinator, who is pretty much overall management of the system of PBIS positive behavior intervention support framework, and that is our director, Mari Bardona. And then there's the PBIS external coach. Now, this is different from your instructional coach that you see in the classroom. In this case, we have designated PBIS coaches that are for external coach, that's me, and then at the school sites, they're designated school coaches at the site, and they are the PBIS internal coach. So when I say coach, those are who I'm referring to. The external coach does a lot of the management and making sure things get done, implementing, doing a lot of the training, and sustaining the framework and making sure it's done with fidelity. And then we have the PBIS internal coaches, which, like I said, are school site coaches who help implement, work with their teams to help implement the PBIS framework at their sites and do all this hard work that you have seen today. They do a lot of the collecting data. They do a lot of the work together. They get trained through Mario or myself, and then they in turn train their team and their staff at their site. Oh, what did I do? Sorry. Okay. So, here we go. So, in order for a school leadership team to be successful, there needs to be a strong coaching support structure. And so they have certain roles that they need to do. And so in this case, we have PBIS leads or coaches that have certain roles and duties and responsibilities, which are to teach and to prompt, communicate, facilitate, and delegate. And so they make sure they give the information as far as PBIS is concerned. And they are an integral part of implementing, evaluating, and sustaining school-wide PBIS and sustaining it over time. Which one do I? And here is a page of my Google site. And this I developed so that this is a resource for our teams to access, and it has the different levels of support. It has the tier one supports that they can go and reference, tier two, and when we get trained in tier three, all the tier three supports, and then at the end there's just general PBIS resources that they have access to. We took out the link. So
on the website, there's a place for tier one to click, and in that area there are all sorts of resources, all of the training PowerPoints that the teams have gone through, documents they can use and share, videos they've made to share with other members, and it's for every tier. All the trainings are in there, and times and dates. So again, PBIS is a continuous improvement cycle. Teams develop and revise, they develop, they adopt, they implement, they review based on data, they prioritize based on the data what is an area we need to work on first. So it's not like everything at once, but what's going to give us the most bang for our buck right now according to the data. They develop, and again, they adopt, and the cycle continues based on the data they have collected. And that's for all three levels. All levels of PBIS have a data collection and review component. So where are we going from here? Well, we have some next steps. Our plan is to implement a community of practice for our coaches so that they can have ongoing support for their work, to create ongoing professional development for PBIS teams to support and sustain schools, and in addition to create training and learning opportunities for all district staff members, classified and certificated, data collection tools for schools, to work on those for schools, and to continue to build capacity in our district. And that actually concludes our presentation, and we're ready for questions.
Are there any questions from the board? Angelina?
Thank you for the information and the presentations. Greatly appreciate it. Just a couple of quick questions. It was stated, Danielle, I think it was during your presentation, that any member of staff can report behavior. So I know that the permanent staff, let's say, are trained, but what about the volunteers? A lot of the campuses have lots of regular standard volunteers. Are they trained in any way, and so that if they see something, they can also report it?
So what we're working on now at our level is identifying for the schools, as they share with us their needs, groups that need some training. We, for instance, Eleanor has done a training with the music teachers, because they go to all different school sites, and every school has a different program that they've implemented in their framework. And we have plans to also train our community liaisons, who are all here tonight. Other classified staff, including, we've been asked to do a training for all of the food service staff who work at the schools.
That was my next question.
because classified staff has so many interactions with students that it's important that they understand exactly what the school is doing and why. And so yes, the schools do bring in other team members. They do. Some of the schools are doing some, like, morning club meetings with their parents, where they're sharing PBIS with their parent groups. I know they did that at Jellick, and I think at some of the other schools they have been doing that. Danielle, is there anything you'd like to add?
No, maybe think right away about our attitude. Mm-hmm. So in most cases, they haven't filled out the formal classroom.
Mm-hmm. So there is a plan, though, to have formal training, like for all classified employees, you know, the part-time ones.
Yes,
everybody.
We are working right now on a calendar to do that.
Yeah, I just think that in order for us to have consistency, that's going to be key, that they're on the same page as everyone else and that they know what they're supposed to be looking for and how they're supposed to handle it as well. So then my other question
Can I respond a little bit more to that, too, because I think the board has similar questions to what you just asked. And so because it's not a canned program, it's a framework, so each staff and each school takes the responsibility to train. Because there's the Gladiator Way at Giano, and there's PAWS at Blandford and so forth. But there are consistent pieces around the framework that has just been explained to you. So we've highlighted four schools, but there's some consistencies throughout. So we do have days of professional development that are for our classified staff coming up winter break, and it's conference style. So there are going to be sessions around PBIS from a general overview perspective, so at least even some of our classified employees know the specific questions to ask. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be handled in two different ways, from an overview as well as site-specific for the training piece.
Okay. The next thing is regarding Tier 3, and I know we were focused more on Tier 1 today, but how is it being handled with, there's a lot of schools on the chart that are still in the rollout and implementation phase, so they haven't even gotten there yet. So at those sites, what happens when there's somebody who, there's a Tier 3 incident that needs to be dealt with right away? Are we still using the old school way, or where are we at with that? How do we handle that?
Well, and in fact, none of our schools have yet been trained in Tier 3, and
right.
Danielle and I have been progressing along in the training ourselves, and we'll be trained in Tier 3 training, trainer of trainers type of model this summer. But I believe, Danielle, did you want to respond to that, or Carlos maybe?
It came up today during the Tier 2 training as we were addressing, and so we thought, okay, we really have to get into Tier 2, and we implemented check-in, check-out so that we could support our students who had an increasing number of referrals. Now, looking at that, those should really be Tier 3 kids because they're our top kids that need support, but we haven't been trained there yet. So I think we're using like a balance of our old school kind of method for supporting those students, but using what we've learned from positive behavior and support to support those students as best we can.
And if I also may add, the Alternative Learning Center has also, that's what it's evolving into. Currently, we do have one. Although you're not trained in Tier 3 officially, you do have students that you have enough data to determine collectively that they've exhausted the supports that are available at the site level. Mm-hmm. This year, we have one of those students who is now greatly benefiting from a much more individualized learning program at the Alternative Learning Center.
So then, based upon your chart, we're behind because it says cohort one should be doing the tier three in 17-18, but you said that's not coming up until this summer, next summer?
The chart is the training chart, not the implementation chart.
Oh, okay.
So the year is when they train, then the following year they would implement.
So they'll implement the following year. Okay, I read that.
And then the trainers will be training us in December. The teams will be trained in Tier 3 by our outside trainers. And then in the summer, district personnel will be trained in Tier 3 because we've been slowly moving into a model where we become the trainers and then we continue the process without having to have an outside trainer.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Malkin?
Just a couple of comments and observations. Going along with what Ms. Pride was saying, consistency, I think, is very important, and that you're basically talking about changing the culture of the school. And in order to do that, like you said, you have to have all staff involved. But at the same time, the title, Positive Behavioral Interventions and Supports, I get a little confused when I hear the words problem behavior and consequences being used. I can understand behavior or trainable moments or teaching moments, but when you start talking about consequences and problem behavior, I can think of the old system rather than the positive behavioral support system. I think part of that is just what we were just discussing, that you're doing it in three tiers and you've got some of the old and some of the new. Hopefully when we get to tier three, training and implementation, negative terms like consequences and behavior and problems will be something of the past. And we'll be talking about teachable moments.
So the consequence system is part an integral part of the framework, of the evidence-based framework, PBIS. And the difference between and then I may ask one of the schools to springboard off of this, but the difference between the old way of looking at behavior and looking at it through the framework is that the whole site agrees that these things are minor things that can be dealt with by teachers in the classroom, because if there is no consequence at all, and the consequence can be a recognition of something positive, but it can also be a redirection. So with the minors, it's often more of a redirection of the behavior, but there will always be things that happen that merit some level of consequence. The idea is that it's not just one teacher doing all, not agreeing that, wait, this is not a major thing. This is something that you would be able to actually handle in your classroom. And it also gives the administration data, because if they're going to put students into a Tier 2 or a Tier 3 level intervention, they need to have a collection of data, both minor incidents and major incidents, I'm sorry, so that they can move forward and decide, does this student merit a different level of attention? Would either one of the schools like to respond?
I think, if I may add, in terms of when I think of Giano and you think of the shift of a positive system of support, there's still a space for disciplinary procedures and for consequences. The shift comes in when you think of that's not the only thing that you do, that you're looking at to implement other means of correction that is not detention, suspension, expulsion. That the consequence will include maybe being part of a lunchtime group that is discussing how to deal with anger. That is a consequence in terms of the terminology, because it is designed to redirect a specific behavior. So I think the fundamental shift is that we're moving beyond punitive consequences to more positive consequences, if that makes any sense.
Well, you use the word consequences. I see it as individuals in Tier 1 has a teachable moment where he's not showing respect or responsibility, he can go up to tier two. Tier two, technically, I guess, would be the consequence. And then tier three, I would see tier one would be, you have certain core elements across all schools that would be in tier one. And then when you get to tier two, and especially tier three, is where you start identifying those behaviors that are unique to your population and your school.
So the tiers are levels of support that a student needs,
right,
which are identified because of behaviors through the data that's been collected.
Correct.
So, I think some of it is semantics, and some of it is over time in terms of changing culture. But at the site level, it's not always viewed as consequences being negative. And yes, I do agree, it is the ultimate and teachable moment when students are, you know, have made a choice that we'd prefer they not make. It's an ultimate and a teachable moment.
The on page 9, you talk about rearrangement of the antecedent environment.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if the antecedent is something that's happening at home? Family's going through a divorce. There's a lot of fighting at home, and the child's acting out at school as a result of that. How do you rearrange that antecedent?
Well, when you rearrange an antecedent behavior, I mean, there are certain things that schools have control over and certain things that they do not have control over.
Right.
So the model really is a framework for what we can do and what we actually can control to assist students. Because even if a student comes with a lot of a baggage, and many of our students do, When the school is able to identify that that is happening, they can also build in for the student support that will help them to be able to be more resilient. So typically, though, we're looking at what's happening when the student is at school, why is it happening, and why is the student acting out? And again, we haven't been fully trained in Tier 3, and that's why I'm focusing mostly on Tier 1. But the idea behind PBIS is that if you are truly implementing Tier 1 well, you will reduce the need for those other levels. And I like to always call it, we're going to bring us back into the green, because students are not intended in this model, in this framework, to stay at Tier 3 or Tier 2. The idea is that you are helping them come back into the green, if you will.
Yeah, we just happened to have a second presentation today, which is the Family Resource Center. And I would hope that there'd be use of the Family Resource Center in especially Tier 2 and Tier 3 if the antecedents are beyond the...
We use them liberally.
Okay. On Gianno's form on minor incident report, I noticed under means of correction, it talks about warning, counseled, reviewed, spoke to parents, conference with parents, referred to counselor, et cetera. I don't see the use of modeling in that, you know, trying to model the behavior for the student. These seems to be more referrals than teaching or modeling.
Okay, the original lesson in terms of modeling happens during our kickoff, during the week of welcome. Mm-hmm. That's when just our kids don't do it quite as nicely when they walk in and out of the cafeteria, but we do something very similar in terms of how to walk to the cafeteria, how to get a hall pass, when to ask to go to the restroom, and a lot more very specific behaviors that are taught during the initial week of school. And if you see the minor incident report, means of correction, reviewed expectations is the second one, because it is the most commonly used. And when we say reviewed expectations, the expectation of the staff in terms of reviewing it is modeling or clarifying what that expectation looks like.
And one last comment. You have this cycle on here for improvement of the system. It would be nice if this would be the same one that we'd use for students. You don't see problems on here. You don't see consequences. You know, the student has a teachable moment. You review it. You prioritize what you're going to do. You revise it and use this for students as well as for the system. It'd be all positive then.
Just just to respond to that real quickly, the cycle is really about the system, the whole framework in general, and the system where data is collected. And so at every level, there's data collection. So at the first level, the data collection really is for locations and settings and, you know, where are we still having issues. Maybe we need to change supervision in the cafeteria, for instance, if we're seeing a lot of reports of behaviors in the cafeteria according to our data collection, then we might make some changes maybe in how we supervise. We look at what's happening in that area at tier one. At tier two, it's really looking at, is our check-in, check-out working for the students that we have in check-in, check-out? If we have we decide on a certain percentage of students that we want it to be working for, and if it's not, then we look at, okay, are we implementing this with fidelity? Sometimes we think we are, and sometimes we aren't. So that's something that the team brings back and looks at that. And that's what the cycle really means. So in essence, it really is looking at students.
Ms. Friedman?
Back. Okay. to be honest, when I heard of PBIS, I figure, okay, now the teachers have to deal with all the discipline problems and no more suspensions or that. So thank you for the presentation. So many wonderful things are happening in the schools. As I walk around, I see the gold coins and all the positive feedback and everything. Thank you for saying you're trying to do a culture of kindness. That sounds wonderful. Again, all the programs, you guys work so hard. It's really good to see. Gianno, your discipline referral. It was outstanding, I thought, you know, and then where the student has to be removed sometimes. We don't want that to happen, but unfortunately some kids might behave that way, very few. I really like how the administrator will follow up within a week with the student that was having trouble. So that's really important. Which brings me to, on page 9 also, it said frequent monitoring, evaluating, and reassessing. So how often does that happen in the other schools? I know at Gianno it happens less than a week. What is the average to make sure that we're following up on these students?
So part of what we're looking at on page 9 is Tier 3, and we have not implemented Tier 3. We haven't even begun Tier 3 training yet. So part of it is individually based on when the schools do follow up. So each of them have a system. So if you wanted, they could respond as individual schools in terms of what's the procedure that they have. Would you like that?
Well, I know that that's like old school now because we're not there yet. But unfortunately,
it's still good practice. It's still good practice.
Yes.
We still have a follow-up.
We may have some students that are just, you know, that are removed from the classroom. They have to be. What do you do to make sure that doesn't happen again once they are taken? That's all I'm saying. Yeah, it may not be peer. We don't know yet the tier three, but to make sure that it will stop.
So with our, between the counselors and administrators, we'll check in with the students that we met with, whether it's just a calendar reminder, I got to check back in with Nick next week, or so we can check in with the students. Also students who have gone to the ATS site, those Tier 3 students, they are also provided with an exit plan. So that's communicated with all teachers so that we're all aware on what those students' strategies are, whether it's I need to step out of the classroom for a minute or a code word, or you know, maybe they need a break or they want to just walk up to the office and come back. So there is an exit plan with our Tier 3 students, and then our Tier 2 students, we check in on them just based off of who met with them to get through that situation.
And are Tier 2 students allowed to get counseling if you see that that's necessary at that point?
Yes.
Before they get higher up everywhere?
Number one go-to.
And my last question would be, I wanted to say it's outstanding to use the Alternative Learning Center. That's really good. How many external and internal coaches are there? You said they're not the same coaches for academic. So I wanted to find out how many do we have in our district?
So I'm the only external coach for the district at the district level. Internal coaches, there's one at each site at the school.
And so, but I thought you said there's different ones that just plan on PBIS.
Yes. They are determined by their site. They're not the instructional coach.
And so do we share them amongst a couple schools, or do they have their own?
Let me clarify. So Mari is our district coordinator through her role. Eleanor is a out-of-the-classroom, full-time PBIS coach doing training and support fidelity amongst our campuses. Every school has a lead. It is an in-the-classroom teaching teacher who leads the PBIS initiative on the campus. So it's not an out-of-the-classroom TOSA as a coach. So our instructional coaches are out-of-the-classroom, full-time release instructional coaches, but our PBIS coaches are more of a lead, and it's part of their adjunct duty. That's the common. So every single campus has a lead as a PBIS person.
Okay. Great presentation. Thank you so much.
Mr. Chen?
Thank you for working so hard to implement this benefit every student in our district. I have a question on page 10 for the schools. The core one school, the group of schools, and the two and core two, and the tier one implement at 2015 to 2016. And why does it matter if we put like Rowan High School to the first group and core one? The my question is, the students, for example, in Alvarado, and they had tier one at 2015 to 2016, and when they go to high school and still have tier one, and would it be any difference if the Roland High School had trained tier one and tier two, and I mean 1 year earlier, so the kids promoted to high school, they already had, they used to the tier one and tier two. Would that make a difference?
So I'm going to start with that. What we did, because we were beginning a new district initiative, we started with schools who volunteered. Mm-hmm. And so because we're talking about changing cultures, we looked at schools that were interested in this as a learning initiative to pilot it for us for cohort one. And so we had the schools that are in cohort one. As you can see, it's our largest cohort. Those schools volunteered to be the front runners in the work. So your theory is excellent in terms of looking if Alvarado, say, was trained in 15-16, mm-hmm. Tier 1 was implemented in the 16-17 school year, which is the year that Roland High School is being trained. So they, the students, there is a lag right. That's there. It's not as significant as you think because these are adult years. Kid years are the years after. Right. The other part of it is all of our schools have something in place right now. And so it and what's happening at Alvarado with their honor code is different than what's happening at Roland High School because they still teach expected behaviors and so forth. So it's not dramatically different because we have similar expectations for all students, but the honor code at Alvarado is different than the contributors, communicators, and thinkers at Roland High School, the pieces that they use. But your theory is excellent, but we went with volunteers first.
But after 2020, then no difference. Right. It's all trained. Right. Yeah. And how much the parents involved, how much the parents have understanding of this? So any meeting with the parents? And parents need to know about this.
I did a presentation last year to Dr. Mitchell's group of parents on PBIS and kind of just in general what the framework was and a little bit about what the schools were doing. I know, again, the individual schools are doing some training and or planning to do some training of their parent groups because we recognize that PBIS can be used at home. You can do the same thing at home with your kids that you can do at school. You don't have to, you can do the framework. I mean, it really there are components of the framework that they can implement.
There we go. Okay. Thank you.
I do have one question in here, but I have some comments first. I'm probably your biggest cheerleader for this because as I go out into the community when I was running for office, that was one of the most common questions I got is what are these schools doing about these kids and their behavior? Because that's what they see on the news. They see all these delinquents and all the crime and all that. So, and then we hear now from the teachers who are having to take care of such severe problems in the classroom. The board has been concerned that sometimes it doesn't appear that we're intervening for the kids that are failing a lot of classes until kind of a late date. But I like the fact that you're integrating the behavior with the academic, and hopefully as this is more successful and people are used to it, it becomes commonplace, we can, it'll work. So then I can go out and tell them, see what we're doing, right? So now how then do teachers refer kids that are not behavior problems, but academic problems. How do you work with those students?
I think from the school side perspective.
Tag, I'm it. I know. I knew I wanted to sit over there. Okay. Well, particularly at Giano, we do have, specific to Giano, we do have a personnel that does specifically that. We do have a out-of-the-classroom interventions coordinator who she is a member of the PBIS Tier 2 team, as well as she coordinates our academic interventions. So she's the go-to person. The reason why she's part of this process is because more often than not, they are related. If you have a student who's struggling academically, they tend to act out, which in terms it is the root behavior or the cause of the behavior. Therefore, that person is there to advocate for an academic intervention to resolve behavior. That's specific to Giano.
Mm-hmm. And then one question for maybe all of you. Do you think, since you've talked about training or teaching parents, if each school site on their website had a short video explaining and showing what it looks like and what you're trying to do, it might be a thought for training parents? Because we're a look-see generation. We're not a sit and listen to a lecture.
Danielle, did you want to say something? I think you have something.
Sorry. Our Alvarado Matador Network, last year when we started Tier 1, our students made videos every week. We have a Monday morning video presentation. It's like our little news show. And so they did go through and teach expectations every week. And then this year it's carried over into like Code of Honor, like what does honor look like? So it is on YouTube. It is for anyone to view.
Are there any more questions, Board? Okay, well, thank you very much for this presentation. It was nice to hear and to ask all our questions and keep up the good work. I know it's taken a lot of work to get to here, and there's still more to do, but we appreciate you working so hard at it for our students.
Thank you so much.
Okay, 2-minute break. Minutes, not 10 minutes. Do you have more coming for your team or just two of you? Two more? Are they in the room? Are they here? We need everybody who's going to be a speaker today up to the front table so we can get ready to start.
Yeah, that's okay. Just
restroom break is allowed.
Okay. Make sure she doesn't trip. Okay. So we'll.
All right.
Okay. Well, she'll probably be the only person to come through that door. Okay. So thank you, Dr. Mitchell. And board, okay.
So, do you want to introduce the next topic?
Our next topic will be the Family Resource Center, if I can say it straight. I'm going to turn this back over to Dr. Mitchell.
Thank you. So as we transition now, we intentionally put these two presentations for learning opportunities for our board together because they do dovetail together. And so they operate separate entities and separate work that's taking place, but it is all around student support. And so Laura Lestrada is here as our coordinator of our Family Resource Center, as well as a great number of our staff from our Family Resource Center as well, to share about the work that they do at the Family Resource Center to support our students and our families and our community. Laurel?
Thank you, Dr. Mitchell and board, for having us here tonight. And we're very grateful for the opportunity to give you an update on the work we do serving students and families in our district at the Family Resource Center, and some information about the shifts that are underway over there in the work that we do. So joining me today are three key partners in the work we do. One is changing an appointment, but she'll be right back. We have Dr. Maribel Contreras, who's our supervisor for the trainees we have in counseling, and that's the Gear Up program. And then we have Julio Pimentel, and he is one of our community liaisons here to represent the work we do at the FRC. And he also works closely with our foster population. And then Alicia Mardini will be back shortly. She is the Chief Executive Officer for East Valley Community Health Center. So I'm very grateful to have the three of them here with me, as well as all the FRC staff who came out tonight, all so dedicated to our students and our families. And so I'm just very pleased to be here and to provide this information. Our primary goal at the FRC is really to provide support for families that's designed to eliminate barriers for students to achieve their best potential in school. And we see ourselves as an extension of the excellent teaching and learning that's happening in our schools and a direct link to every student achieving at their best potential. So. Now I learned to click. I did it. So, Roland Unified School District teachers, administrators, and other educators do tremendous work to establish curricular programs and opportunities for our students. And as I mentioned, we at the FRC see our purpose is to support that wonderful teaching and learning. While some people go through life and seem to innately be resilient when they're faced with challenges, that whole pull yourself up by your bootstraps, and many people are deeply affected. Most people are deeply affected by the risk factors that are present in their lives. So we work with families, school personnel, and others in the community to establish these building blocks known as Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and then these are specifically organized as school needs. So we begin with the physiological needs, where we attend to whether students have enough to eat, whether they have clothes, safe place to go, a place to sleep. Then we move up. Got animation. We have their safety, which is both emotional and physical, and addresses a lot of what happens in the classrooms, and we try to support the schools in that, in those elements of safety. And then the next one is belonging. When students are forming positive relationships, when they have adult role models, positive peer relationships. And then we are also concerned with the positive classroom culture that's present, and that's right along the lines of PBIS, so these are very well linked. And this includes positive feedback, time for reflection, and encouragement to take risks in a safe environment. And then finally, when these building blocks are in place, a student is available to learn and achieve their best potential. So this is sort of a framework that guides the way in which we organize the work we do and some of the evidence-based practices that we utilize. So I mentioned at the FRC, we see our role is to be focused on eliminating barriers that students face in those domains of Maslow's hierarchy of school needs. And in doing so, we're always focused on student learning and supporting teachers and principals in the work that they do and the support that they provide at the school sites. So what are these barriers? I'm sure you all know them, so we'll just go through them quickly. Some are environmental, others are personal. We start with the neighborhood. Our neighborhoods have high levels of chronic poverty, high levels of mobility among our students and families, crime in the neighborhood, substance abuse, gangs, and then racial and ethnic conflicts. Then we have barriers that emerge from the families. We have intergenerational poverty, domestic violence, and we have parents who often model problem behavior, and specifically that occurs within the schools when parents themselves have had unpleasant or negative experiences in schools as students. And so they carry that out with their children, and that's a cycle that we focus on breaking. And we have unsupervised children and youth. We have instability in families, whether that's due to foster care, homelessness, or changes in custody. And then we also have juvenile offenders. Then some of these barriers emerge from school, and they are in the form of linguistic and cultural differences. Difficulty, families often have difficulty with enrollment and meeting the requirements. We provide a lot of support in that area. And then, of course, students are often, when they've moved around and they have a lot of risk factors, they're behind in school. So it's important to attend to their academic needs. Then other barriers are personal. Students have chronic or short-term medical conditions that impact their ability to learn. Often there's limited access to medical care, and then there are social-emotional barriers. Students who struggle with belonging to a group and having positive peer interactions, and then students act out with anger, anxiety. So we at BFRC focus our support. We all know that when you shoot too many arrows at once, you seldom hit the target. Like our poor baby here. So we really focus on developing support that is directly linked to promoting student achievement. So we don't do just anything, but we really target it back to this goal of supporting student achievement. And we also utilize evidence-based practices rather than following instincts or doing what has always been done. We really look to make sure that we are utilizing practices that have an evidence base, that have been proven successful in other circumstances. And a big part of our role and one of the benefits of having a family resource center is that we can allow school site personnel to focus on teaching and learning. Maybe there's a mystery relative to a child's custody or who has educational rights, or there's a crisis, we can step in and do the detective work to take care of those, and that frees up the principal and the teachers to focus back on teaching and learning. So who is the FRC? We have so many here tonight, and these are some photos of folks in action. We have 11 bilingual community liaisons, and the languages represented are English, Spanish, Mandarin, both Mandarin and Cantonese, and Korean. We have 6 Emmys, which are Early Mental Health Initiative paraprofessionals who work with our elementary students in social-emotional areas. We have 3 community assistants, and we have one here tonight. They do various functions to reach out to the preschools and to coordinate our homework club for at-risk students. Then we also have student assistants who support the homework club and other initiatives that we provide at the Family Resource Center. We have a health assistant, and she supports families in getting access to Medi-Cal and other forms of health insurance. We have an elementary counselor who works with elementary students and also oversees the Emmys, those paraprofessionals I mentioned. We have a secretary, a senior office assistant, myself as coordinator. We have our counseling supervisor, Dr. Contreras, and working with her, we have 5 Gear Up trainees and probably a 6th very soon. And then we have an intern from Cal State Fullerton who's working with us in the homework club and supporting the students at Nogales High School. So part of our vision at the FRC is to garner widespread community support to assist with eliminating these barriers, because nothing happens in isolation. No one entity would be able to provide all the services that are actually available at the FRC. So we combine the contributions of many partner agencies to result in the comprehensive elimination effort to eliminate barriers among our students and their families. Right now, we are building our community collaborative. We're up to about 90 agencies. We meet 5 times a year. And those agencies represent government, nonprofit, post-secondary, law enforcement, and then health and wellness areas. We also have a nonprofit, Friends of the FRC, which has 501c3 status, a board of directors, and this serves as an extra source of funds for specific purposes that support our families. So the services that we provide at the FRC, they emanate from case management, which consists of home visits, referrals, and translation. We provided case management to nearly 2,000 families last year, and we also provide comprehensive parenting education. Part of that is in the form of what's called the Morning Break Club, where our community liaisons work alongside principals and staff members to provide topics in parenting for families, for parent moms and dads in the mornings. And we have a lot of other parenting opportunities, including right now we're offering the Parent Project, which is an evidence-based parenting curriculum that meets the court mandate when that is something that is required for families in our community. And our partner agencies provide a lot of parenting opportunities for our families as well, sometimes through Morning Break Club, sometimes in other capacities. We have the Homework Club, which I mentioned. We served 89 students last year after school, 3 days a week, getting homework help and adult role models. It's a very successful program. And we also coordinate foster youth services through the FRC. I mentioned Medi-Cal enrollment. Last year, 132 families were served in that capacity and were linked with Medi-Cal or re-enrolled if their enrollment had lapsed. So 350 students were served in the ME program. We worked on 290 counseling referrals under the leadership of Elizabeth, who's here, and our elementary counselor Sochi served 102 elementary students in her program. So then, of course, we also provide supplies, which is in the form of uniforms, food, school supplies, clothing, hygiene kits. Recently, we were able to work with a lot of our partners to make sure that our sixth graders had a chance to go to camp. A homeless sixth grader got to go, and in doing so, we gathered enough materials that we were going to be able to have a supply for when kids don't have a sleeping bag, a heavy jacket, maybe some boots if we can work out the sizes. And then, of course, we also have events. And the work that we do is very personalized because each family presents with different challenges, and the level of support we provide needs to match those challenges, of course, be evidence-based and directly linked to student achievement. So, more on our events. These are the events that we provided last year. We start the year with Fresh Start, and last year we served 195 students at Fresh Start, where students got a backpack, uniform, hygiene kit, the supplies they need to literally have a fresh start to the new school year. Then we have holiday events, and those are upon us now. Thanksgiving baskets served 227 families. We had 231 families served in Adopt-N-Shop. 12 children participated in Shop with a Cop. And 200 families received holiday baskets. Then in moving forward in the year, in February, we had Heart and Soul, where 103 students received shoes and socks. That event is provided out of the generosity of Kiwanis and Senior Pathfinders who provide the shoes. We had a lot of PTAs, scouts, and other community groups do sock drives and provide one or two pairs of socks for our students. My Sister's Closet is an event in March where we took 27 girls to Azusa Pacific University to get prom dress, shoes, accessories, makeup, all the stuff they need to have a great prom. And Supervisor Janice Hahn's office funded the bus for that event. And the FRC staff also worked to purchase a ticket for a student. And I think some have learned how to do boutonnieres and corsages so that we can just help out in any way we need. And finally, the culminating event last year was the Safe and Healthy Kids Fair. And we had 38 agencies come together to provide booths, which connected families with community resources. If they didn't provide a booth, they provided an activity for families to participate in together. And 514 families participated and showed up that day. So we have some changes this year. And one thing that isn't listed here that I'll just talk about, we're putting in parent centers at four of our elementary schools, Northam, Jellick, Via Corta, and Yorbita. The parent centers will have pods of three computers and a printer where families can come and access the internet, print if they need to, do search for jobs, search for housing, all those things. We take the internet for granted. A lot of our families don't have easy access to it. And we'll have someone there to support them in those confusing searches. And we have expanded the counseling services that are available to our students. We implemented an outpatient substance abuse counseling program at Santana High School and the ALC. And our Gear Up program has replaced Zone 78 because it serves more than just 7th and 8th grade students. So we're at the three K-8s, the two 7-8 schools, the two high schools, Santana and the ALC, and we're piloting services at one elementary school and seeing how it's going. And so we're expanding the community collaborative I also mentioned. And we have an enhanced collaboration with East Valley, and we're so fortunate to have Alicia Mardini here with us, the chief executive officer there. She supported us by providing shot clinics at some of our school sites, which help facilitate getting kids in school that first day. We redid the MOU and made sure that it was matching the partnership we wanted to have. We've started nurse articulation meetings where the East Valley nurses meet with Roland nurses and talk about the needs of school-based nursing versus clinic nursing and try to bridge that with each other. And we've also reorganized Medi-Cal reimbursements and administration activities to try to streamline that a bit, and bring the funds in a little more healthy way. And so then we also have things that are in the works. Oh, the thing I forgot to mention that we've done that's brand new, it's just very fresh, it is a foster mentor program. So Julio and I are working with the REACH program at Mount SAC, and we're going to pair up our foster kids in grades 8 through 12 with Mount SAC students who are in the REACH program, many of whom have exited foster care. So they can understand a little bit what our kids are going through, and they can say, hey, look at me, I'm in college. And so we're really looking forward to that, and Rotary will provide some funding for that. We have a fun icebreaker event planned for December 7th, and we're going to follow that up with the opportunity to go to a recording studio with the two groups of students, and then finally we're going to take them on a college trip and purchase a college t-shirt for all of them. So that's something that's very new, and we're really looking forward to that. So then we have some things in the works. We are working to better utilize the clinic at Via Corta, the East Valley Community Health Center clinic. And so we are in the process of diverting our families' medical needs there because it can be a more comprehensive medical home for them. So they can have, the whole family can be served there, and they have mental health supports, and they can do, I think they can do everything but x-ray at that clinic at Via Corta. And so it also has extended hours, so our students don't have to miss school to have an appointment. They can go up until 7 o'clock every day but Friday, and on every other Saturday that clinic is open. So that supports keeping kids in school, learning, and not getting behind. And in doing that, we're able to enhance the clinic services that are available at the FRC. And we can expand our dental services. Right now, we can't serve students who have Medi-Cal. And we'd like to be able to expand our partnership with East Valley so that the FRC clinic can be more of a dental home for the whole family, and serve some of those social-emotional issues that come up relative to poor dental health care. And then we'd also like to pilot optometric services. So Alicia and I meet frequently and discuss how difficult it is to do optometric, but we're determined. And we'll eliminate those barriers any way we can. So we're also researching providing a school-based food pantry and determining whether we can provide some fresh produce for our families at one of our North schools. So just to wrap it up, we always come back to our main purpose, which is to eliminate barriers for students to achieve their best potential in school. We have a revised website that's user-friendly and full of great information. We also are on Facebook and Twitter and getting the word out about all the work we're doing. So are there any questions?
We have questions from the board. We'll start with Carrie.
Thank you for the presentation, and I'm glad you present this today. I knew the FRC had a lot of work, but I didn't know this size. Huge. Yeah. And you have very limited manpower. You have 11 bilingual employees to help translating the thing, and 6 and 3 and the intern. No more than 20. How many you have total? About 20, right?
About 25.
About 25. Yeah. Right? including. But you have such many things you need to do. And only one example is our district had a lot of new immigrant, they need translate Spanish, Chinese, Korean, and some were overflow to me. No, I occasionally receive phone calls and can you translate your board member? Can you translate this as a friendship or as a friend? I do it some IEP documents or anything like that. So I did tell them FRC if you can help to translate some documents to them, but they. They have been your office, but they have you have only two or three Mandarin Chinese translators. How many?
Two.
Mm-hmm. And how many Spanish translators you have?
The rest, one's Korean, and then the rest. So two Chinese, one Korean, and then eight Spanish.
Are they all full time, or some?
The Korean speaker and the Mandarin speaker are part-time.
Part-time.
Yes.
So how many hours a day? Are they are not there all day. They are there in the morning or in the afternoon, something like that?
They are there in the morning, and they work some extra hours doing other projects.
Right. So, but the population of Mandarin speaking or Spanish speaking are increasing, right? Kind of more in recently. So, honestly, let's look at how do you feel? You feel, are they able to handle those besides translation?
Sure.
Other work too.
So, the job of translation is not only at the FRC. There are other translating resources in the school district. Mm-hmm. And so the translating that we provide is really to support the families in bridging between the school and the family. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty new here. I only came in February, but I have been in two districts prior to this. And the level of support that this district gives to the FRC and the amount of support I get professionally and personally from the rest of the district is amazing. And I can tell you that I did not see that in either of the other districts I was in. And when I talk about it to friends in other districts, they're amazed at the support we get from the district.
My suggestion is the possibility we can get more intern volunteer to do the job.
We're always looking for interns. And Dr. Contreras has done a really good job of getting counselors who are bilingual in Mandarin and Spanish as well. Any other languages?
Just for now, those two.
Okay.
We're looking
yes.
for Korean also.
Yes. She's done a really good job recruiting. And not so much that the children need the language translation, but in order to interface with the parents.
Right.
And then to also understand their situation.
It's also important to realize that much of what the
in non-confidential cases,
right.
we can rely on that.
We do that
and, and with the technology, sometimes translate, you don't need to be the translator, the physical be there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can translate by phone or video.
Can I just clarify the translation piece? You're not translating for the district. You're translating for your families that utilize your services, correct? We just call you if we need a translator, do is that?
It's focused on supporting the parents. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, just a suggestion. And
thank you.
Thank
yeah.
you. Good work. Yeah.
What we need is trilingual, Spanish, English, Mandarin.
Ms. Friedman?
Thank you
very much for a great presentation. It was on.
You want to use this?
Uh-oh. All the way? Huh?
Now?
Okay. All right. And what a great compliment to say that we're supporting you, you know, so much at our district.
So it gets on the recording.
Okay. Okay. No problem. And what I wanted to say is what a great new thing with the foster mentor program, 8th through 12th grade for Mount SAC, the REACH program. That sounds outstanding and what you're going to do with them. I just have a few questions. Let's see. You said 290 counseling referrals last year. Were you able to see all of those students?
So the referrals go to agencies with whom we have memoranda of understanding, and one is Pacific Clinics, and actually Dr. Contreras has recently left Pacific Clinics as the director there. So we would send referrals to her and to Children's Bureau, to Foothill, well, recently we added Foothill Family and also Enki. But Elizabeth, who is here tonight, she is the community liaison who handles all those referrals. And she gets service for anyone who has been referred, but also has to have parent consent. And unfortunately, there's a big stigma with mental health that we're trying to work on in Morning Break Club and in other ways in which we work with families so that they don't see getting some counseling for their child as a stigma. Do you want to talk about that?
Just to give you guys a quick update, in the Gear Up program to date, we've had 78 referrals, and we're seeing 60 kids. Those other students have either been coordinated through Elizabeth to go to outside agencies because of the level of care, and they need more psychiatric services, they need more intensive services, or some of the parents have just refused to sign it. Which is sign the consent. So we're running into that same barrier of how do we engage the parents to come in and get consent for their child to receive the services. And some of them are scared because they're new immigrants, and how does that affect my child? And others are just with the stigma of mental health, and what does that mean in the educational system? And we really try to frame that more positive. And working with the schools, some of the schools that were here with PBIS, we are part of their intervention services. We're trying to help the kid, whether it's social, emotional, relationship, because ultimately all of that affects their their grades, their schoolwork, whether they're invested in attending school, or whether their family cares, or whether they have transportation to get to school. So we're trying to eliminate any barrier. And just the story, I get to hear the stories. And I just want to share like some of the stories at ALC's, the new program that we have. These kids are just crying. And this is the first time they've spoken about their traumatic events. And they're trying to sit in class and talking about their parents being deported and how that affected them. And they've never talked to anyone about that. And the counselors that are there, we provide counseling to every student there. And some of the kids will walk in and they say, I don't need counseling, but I have to sit here and I have to see you. And, you know, the therapists come and they're working with them. And by the third session, they said, well, I don't need counseling. And I think this program is so stupid. And now they don't want to leave and they're in tears. And the teachers are working with us and coming in and saying, what else does the student need? And let's engage the sister, because there is no mother. There is no father. Mother has passed away. Dad's in prison. Grandmother recently died. And now the caretaker is the older sister. And so we're running into a lot of those social, emotional aspects and helping out the kids. So I always tell myself, I'm privileged because I get to hear the stories and help my, I call them my staff. They're the trainees, they're volunteers, they're interns in their master's program. So they're doing their finals and helping these kids out. And just the enthusiasm, some of them are graduates of Roland Unified, and they wanted to come back and give back to the schools that they went to. And they saw the need and just the passion that the trainees have in servicing the kids. And it's awesome to see. And when Laurel told me of that opportunity, I jumped on it, because, you know, my other role, I saw the schools need this, because the hardest thing to do is engage the parents and hear the kids are saying, help me, help me. I want to go to college. I just don't know how to do that. Help me. I eliminate these barriers for me. Help me link up to the resource center. Help me link up to dental services, because that affects their emotional aspects also. The optometrist, maybe it's just they needed reading glasses. You know, so all those things. So thank you for that opportunity and to be part of this amazing program. We're small but mighty.
And you mentioned there were 78 referrals and 60 you're seeing, which is great. The other 18, I know some parents will not approve, but the ones that say they're going to outside counseling, do you check up to make sure that they follow through with that?
We do. We get releases. We sign releases of information, and we make sure before we stop checking in on that student that they're linked up. The majority of them, private insurance. So some of them have gone back to their Kaiser, or we've helped link them up to Blue Cross. And sometimes it was just the barrier of the language and calling. The first initial call is scary for them. So we have the parents coming in, and we have parents now calling the FRC saying, we heard of this program and we really want this. So we were able to expand, and there's very small of me too, but we keep expanding. We're like, the need is there. The need is so great.
Perfect.
So thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. And the homework centers after school, 290 students last year. Where were these homework centers located, at different schools?
So it's an after school. Intervention 3 days a week. And the schools that are targeted are schools with lower achievement levels. And so this year, right now, currently, we are at Rorimer and Hurley. Last year, we were at Yorbita and Roland Elementary. And before I got here, Via Corta and Northam? Yeah? Okay. So we cycle through the schools that have the lower levels of achievement, maybe not such ready access to tutoring.
Okay. And lastly, could we have the staff that's here stand up so we can see who they are? They work so hard.
Stand up, everybody.
Yay, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Mr. Malkin?
I'm really glad that you have the Maslow's hierarchy on that second page. You know, if you look at that, so many of those things can manifest the behavior that we were talking about on PBIS. And that's why I think there's such an important linkage there between the services you provide and our PBIS program, that we can't separate the two, and they really need to really work together. And I'm glad to see on the bottom here you have eats breakfast as a basic need. as you know, we're trying to. It would have been nice if it was in bold letters, but that's. But those are basic needs that they have, and if they don't have those basic needs met, it's hard to do well in school or to concentrate and sit still. I just want to also piggyback on a couple of things that Mr. Chen said, and I think Ms. Edmekamp said about the parents, that if we're going to teach behavior and responsibility or whatever the schools select, that it's got to be something that's taught 24/7. And if we're trying to teach people or students how to interact in a responsible way, a polite way, that the parents need to know what that is also, so they can practice that behavior at home as well as in school. And maybe that's a place that you could help out with the PBIS program, is working with parents to teach PBIS behavior expectations so the student can model that behavior at home as well as away. Because if a student's being taught one thing and then he goes home and the parents are fighting or there's alcohol in the house, a problem or whatever, that it's hard for the student to model that behavior if it's not being taught at home also.
Absolutely. And honestly, when it comes to parenting education, we usually get the majority of the ones we usually get who voluntarily come to a parenting education program aren't the ones who are modeling the worst behavior. But the parent project that Kathy and Irma are doing right now is a court mandate. So they are definitely going through a very comprehensive curriculum that's that targets adolescents, but they include parents of younger kids because they'll be adolescents in a minute and a half, you know. But the schools do request topics, and agencies offer topics, and parents request topics. So it's a threading that needle between having the different needs met so that we can provide comprehensive parenting education.
You mentioned on there the possibility of expanding optometric services. Mm-hmm. In La Puente, they just started a new Lions Club in the city of La Puente. They had a Lions Club for a long time. They reactivated it. It's a real active club now, if I understand. And they have a long tradition of doing, you know, glasses for kids. So that might be somebody you might want to approach to see if they want to take it on as a project to help out.
That sounds great. Yeah. Do you want to talk about our optometric plan?
We call it pilot because Hispale has never done optometric services yet. We have been in operation now for 48 years. And we do medical, dental, and mental health counseling, but we haven't done optometry. So this will be our pilot for everyone. When we talk about optometry services, we are talking about the whole gamut. And all of our services, like the way we do at Villa Corta, a school-based health center, we open them up to the community too, because we believe that the children, as well as the parents, we want to maintain the children in a school as long as they can be in a school until their graduate education. And if their parents are not healthy enough, the kids will have to quit a school. So I have always operated on that premise. And we want to go all the way in optometry services to do, to buy the equipment to do all of the the screening, vision testing, and all of that, the basic, but also going to
like glaucoma testing.
Glaucoma testing, yeah. That tells you how much I know about optometry. Glaucoma testing, and we would like to have our optometrists there. We would love our West Covina clinic works with the Lions Club in West Covina, so we can extend that. That relationship, but we want to have something ongoing all the time for the community.
Thank you. I'm just going to have a page on, but for new this year, you talked about reorganization of Medi-Cal reimbursements and administration activities. Can you just touch briefly on with the LCFF, with the supplemental and concentration funds?
So most of the FRC is funded through LCAP S&C funds. That's the bulk of it. We also have a McKinney-Vento grant for homeless, and we have a few other. Title I is another funding source, but most of it does come from LCAP supplemental concentration funds.
And then on going back on the what was that one you had here? One second here. We had the schools. The parent centers.
Yes, uh-huh.
You mentioned Northam, Jellick, Villa Corta, and Yorbita. Hurley, any possibility that they can get involved in that? Because I remember when I started the SHU program that Hurley had the highest number of Title I students and students that met the need for funding.
So the reason the four schools have the parent centers is because the FRC had rooms at those schools that were largely being used to store materials from previous programs and ancillary office space for staff when they're on that side of town. So it was just kind of a natural extension to take those rooms, repurpose the items in them by putting them in special day preschool classes and a new transitional kindergarten class. So we got the materials in the hands of kids and then freed up space to do this parent function. So that's truly in the same way that the school stepped up to do PBIS. That was the rationale for providing parent centers. But it's also a pilot, and if it's successful, I could definitely see expanding to other schools. I'm sure if a school has a room, that's a good starting place.
Yeah, because Hurley, like I said, has a tremendous need for the families that attend that school. And that's it. Thank you for the service that you all do. And, when I talk about mental health services and clothing and things like this, to people that aren't familiar with education, they'll say, well, is that really the responsibility of schools to do that? And more, these services that you're providing aren't being provided in the community because of cutbacks, changing in insurance, and other reasons. And more, we are having to pick that up and finding a way of funding it. And I think it's an important service. One last question. Any impact on the students that are any like the DACA students or I don't know how many DACA students we have in our school, but
you won't know.
So
we don't know either.
We have definitely had immigration issues brought to us, and Yvonne behind you has gone to a lot of training in from the county and different agencies in immigration resources, and so we have a lot of places to refer families to. And then there's also the fear of I don't want to sign up for Medi-Cal. I don't want to renew my Medi-Cal because I don't want to give any information about myself. We have a foster child who entered last week whose parents were deported, and the situation she was first placed in didn't work out, and so she'll be ours. So we definitely have seen some of the effects of the changes in immigration in the work we do, and we're trying to shift and address it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mill. Good.
First of all, I want to say that one thing that I noticed with FRC is that anytime they come here to the district office for a presentation or if they're acknowledging someone or just giving information about a program, they show up in force. I don't think that there's any other school or anybody who brings more people when they present or come to talk and everything. So as Donna said, thank you guys all for being here and supporting, always supporting your programs. The other thing I wanted to say is that the work that you guys do is very evident. You know, I was fortunate enough to shadow, and that was fantastic. So the work you do is very evident in our community and at our school sites, and you do so much with so little, and it's greatly appreciated. I'm going to not ask questions because I had the opportunity to ask a lot of questions just recently, but I want to hear from you. I think that you should share a little bit about what you do just briefly for anybody who doesn't know.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, and it's nice to see you again. Angelina and I did get to go out to some home visits, and she got to witness a lot of the work that we do up close and personal. But we really do provide that case management, and I think that Maslow's hierarchy of needs is really an important kind of paradigm to view things from, because we know that a disruption in any one of those layers can ultimately affect the self-actualization, which is the learning. So when we're doing our assessments, when we're working with our families, we're always trying to identify where in this hierarchy is the disruption? What is it that the family needs that's going to eventually lead to removing those barriers for learning? So we do, a lot of our cases are ongoing. We do follow up with the families. I know that Mr. Melkin had shared about the PBIS and bring it into the school sites. So I think the FRC is a great pre-existing really model to use. And I think we have already been doing a lot of that work so far. We have our morning break clubs where we have opportunities for speakers to come in and they can do skill building. They can teach the parents how to communicate better with their kids. So ultimately, it does come around. But I know that there are a lot of changes going on right now, and we're really excited for the future of the FRC.
And just real quick, I've already alerted your staff that I have more clothes in my car for you today.
So her closet's clear.
Mine, my friends, my relatives, everybody's.
And you'll take adult and children's clothes? Mostly
Monica?
Kids.
Where's Monica? Monica? Are we still taking adult? Or we have enough from the last? We're taking adult, yes. Okay. Okay.
Well, I have a couple questions. When I joined the board, I know we had to make some very difficult decisions as far as staffing. We had to do some cutbacks because we were years behind getting our reimbursements from Medi-Cal. There were grants that we'd been promised, and we didn't get them. So I wish you good luck that we can maybe get that money flowing in again, because we know you. Although you're doing pretty well, and you might be doing better than where you came from, you can always use more hands and more people to help. Now, for the after school clubs, they're at two schools right now.
Two schools at a time. Yep.
Now, can kids from any school go to those after school clubs, or just kids from those schools?
Teachers refer the students at that school to
just
come
those two schools
and get help. Yep.
Okay. Do you utilize high school students or college students, junior college students, to help tutor?
That's a really good question. We actually, in several ways. Well, we right now have the university intern I mentioned helping at Rohmer with the homework club. And then we also have an alternative learning center student who needs to do some community service, and she is starting at Rohmer to provide tutoring. She can just go straight from Santana down to Rohmer, and so that's something new that she's going to get her community service time there.
I heard Mount SAC had students that will help tutor too if needed. I don't know if you can utilize, you know, students from elsewhere, but the more the better.
Great suggestion.
I think that's about all my questions. You did a fabulous job presenting your program. Actually, no, I am going to go back and ask you another question. Just to give us the nitty-gritty, how are students referred? How do you get referrals to your center? Do schools call you? Do teachers call you? Or how does
yes,
it work?
Yes, all the above. Yep, students or teachers, office staff, administrators, parents can refer themselves. It's a form that they fill out, and that way we're able to keep data on the number of folks we serve and the type of service we provide.
Overall, how many students do you think you serve?
Overall? Well, if we add up all those numbers, I never
it doesn't
really
have the exact.
Added them up. But,
about 1,000?
Well, right, because we had nearly 2,000 referrals alone, and that's not counting counseling or some might dovetail with the events. And we had 514 families at the events. So
Yeah.
It's a healthy number.
It'd be a good total number.
Well, thank you very much for your presentation and for all of you coming and for our audience here who is supporting. I love the shirts, by the way. They're beautiful. So thank you very much for your presentation. And we're going to finish up some board business just to get ready to adjourn. I just want to remind the board that our meeting for November will be on a Tuesday. It's November 14th. There were a couple board members that couldn't make it on our usual Thursday, so it's going to be Tuesday, November 14th at 4:30.
That's
so
our regular schedule.
That's our regular schedule. It's not an extra. Yeah, it's on there. It's not an extra meeting or anything, but it is going to be Tuesday instead of Thursday. So can I have a motion to adjourn?
I make a motion.
Second? Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? We never have opposition to that. Thank you very much.
So do you want me to get it for you now?
Just grab a packet real quick, and I'm walking out, and I'll walk with you. Let me just grab my packet real quick.
I'll take it. You know, I got teenagers. I got to take all the positives where I can get them.